when it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
In order to truly disrupt this model, what we're seeing to be successful is lots of different fintech companies and disruptors attacking each one of those blocks. And so if you think about the stack of blocks toppling over, that's kind of the representation of all the fintechs that are attacking each part of the vertically integrated sort of institution.
G'day and welcome to the Equity Investor Journey podcast, brought to you by the Australian Shareholders Association. I'm Phil Muscatello. Today, I'd like to welcome Doug Morris, CEO of ShareSite, the share portfolio tracking tool. G'day, Doug.
Hi, Phil. Thanks for having me on.
So we're talking about disruption in very disrupted times. How do you define disruption?
Geez, that's a good question. It's a term that's gotten kind of used, I think, well, and then kind of misused over the years as kind of the tech industry has taken hold. But I guess disruption, from my perspective, is any company who fundamentally changes the way that consumers sort of feel about a service or a good, you know, and it becomes the kind of the way we do things, I would say, is the marker of a disruptor in the true sense.
Have you got any examples of that to illustrate?
Well, I suppose if we kind of broaden the lens away from finance or investing, I mean, you know, I think Uber, honestly, that's the one I go to when people ask me this question. You know, taxis for so long were just a fact of life, you know, living especially in a city, anywhere in the world. You kind of knew what a taxi was. A taxi performed a taxi service, and you knew kind of the experience was going to be, you know, like riding in a taxi.
Yeah.
But Uber just fundamentally changed all that. And I go back to my first ever experience with Uber. It was about 2011 in San Francisco where they started. And a friend of mine showed me how it worked. And I was just floored. I mean, I just thought that was the coolest thing. And really, the not having to exchange cash, this was in the States, with a taxi driver was just the best part of it, because, you know, especially in the States where you've got lots of cash payments still, and you've got tipping and you've got change, and it's just such a pain, you know, kind of shoving it through that little bulletproof glass window. So avoiding that, in addition to just ordering it from your phone, was just pure disruption, and it just took hold like wildfire as a result.
Wow, that's a strange concept, bulletproof glass in a taxi for us Aussies.
Yeah, some of the old ones still have that.
So who benefits from disruption?
Well, I think for a true disruptor to kind of come onto the scene and become a permanent fixture of the way we kind of live our lives, you'd have to say consumers. So if a consumer can benefit from one of these companies, that's kind of the mark of a true disruptor. But also, you know, the companies themselves obviously benefit from disruption. Now, a lot of these disruptors may not be, you know, sort of revenue generating companies. They may be tech companies running heavy losses, but you could argue that they would.
And there's a lot of efficiencies involved. I mean, I'm just thinking in particular about a lot of members know about the company Xero, and it's a very good illustration of how something that was done a certain way in the past is now done way more efficiently.
Absolutely. And the Xero example is a good one. We do a lot of work with Xero ourselves. We run ShareSite using Xero. You know, I came in to run a tech company at ShareSite, and I just took control of the Xero files immediately. And it was just so easy. I think, yeah, but Xero, you know, accounting software certainly wasn't something that Xero invented, but they tweaked it in such a way that they made it cloud-based and they really made it collaborative. And they made the user experience really good, in addition to having great software as well. You know, Xero certainly has been a disruptor, but they didn't necessarily invent the category. that they're playing in, if that makes sense.
Before we go on a bit any further with the interview, let's have a bit of an overview of ShareSite, the company that you run, because these two topics, disruption and ShareSite, are quite intertwined.
Yeah, so ShareSite is a portfolio tracking software solution. We provide our product to self-directed investors and also professionals. We allow investors to get clarity around their true performance calculations. So we let you connect ShareSite to your broker. We let you combine multiple accounts. We'll show you benchmarking and performance analytics, and we'll help you on the tax reporting side of things as well.
So in terms of ShareSite, how does ShareSite see itself as a disruptor, and how have you changed things?
Yeah, I suppose we're sort of in a similar vein as Xero, really. You know, we did not at all create the concept of portfolio tracking. Portfolio trackers have been around for years. They've been sort of downloadable software programs from a wide range of companies. They've been attached to some online brokers. You know, the likes of Google and Yahoo have dabbled with portfolio tracking solutions as well. But I think like Xero, what we did is we created a really, honestly, a professional grade software solution. So a solution that can be used by serious self-directed investors or by professionals. And we made it cloud-based, which when we launched the business about 10 years ago was still kind of a new concept. And then we applied a freemium business model, which means that it's kind of like Spotify. You can use a version of ShareSite for free forever. And it's quite a fully featured version, and it is quite generous. And so what we did really is we kind of took an existing concept. We made it, you know, really good in terms of the software build that we did. And then we made it available in a rather disruptive business model, I guess you could say. And so that's kind of how we've charted our course.
So wealth management, fintechs are disrupting the world of wealth management. How's that happening?
Yeah. So, disruption in financial services and wealth management's been really interesting to watch. I think it's been, you know, going back to my example of Uber before, Uber was just totally disruptive almost overnight, really around the world. But financial services has been more of a slow burn. There's been a lot of good sort of think pieces written on why hasn't, you know, the banking system been totally overturned by the likes of Apple or Google? You know, surely these companies could do it, that kind of thing. But I think fin services and wealth management, they're just a bit different because there are so many different, you know, vertically integrated companies out there. And the metaphor we use at ShareSite, it's like, imagine a bank or a big funds manager is like a stack of blocks stacked up vertically. In order to truly disrupt this model, what we're seeing to be successful is lots of different fintech companies and disruptors attacking each one of those blocks. And so if you think about the stack of blocks toppling over, that's kind of the representation of all the fintechs that are attacking each parts of the vertically integrated sort of institution. But, you know, it's also true that people, you know, they trust banks and they like banks. And that might sound like a radical statement, but there is some comfort. And I think this is true for older generations, especially. There is some comfort in an institution that's been around for a long time that has a large building and sort of Roman pillars out front of it. You know, banks perform a critical service, obviously, for consumers and for economies. And everyone kind of needs a bank account, right? You need a bank account to buy things, to get paid your salary into. You know, here in Australia, we need superannuation accounts because they're mandatory. And so what we say at ShareSite is that financial services, they tend to be sold rather than bought, right? Consumers don't really sort of, you know, enthusiastically go out shopping for financial services, you know, like you would something else online. You sort of tend to need them, and then more services are sold to you on top of those. And so I think disruption in financial services and wealth management's been slower, but it is happening.
So what are some examples then of that?
Yeah, so examples would be, if you think about that vertically integrated stacking and kind of toppling over, right? So think about retail banking for transactional accounts and savings accounts and kind of basic banking requirements. There are what we now call neobanks that are coming onto the scene. So in the UK, they've had a lot of traction with these, with banks like Mozo and Revolut. And these are essentially just totally online companies that handle transactions and savings and sort of travel money accounts. And then I suppose in the kind of the investing space, the companies there would be robo-advisors. And they are essentially online financial advisors that will provide a basic asset allocation mixture for you based on your risk tolerance and your time horizon. And then they'll invest your money on your behalf into a preset menu of ETFs. So it's kind of broad-based, low-level financial planning vis-a-vis ETF investing. So those are probably two prime examples.
Yeah, and I guess the one of the points, one of the benefits of, for example, robo-advisors is that they keep costs to investors down.
They do. Yeah, they really do. And robo-investing, we work with a lot of robo-advisors in terms of sort of technology partnerships. And we love what they do because, you know, they really make investing accessible and easy and low cost for beginner investors in particular. So we really like what they're doing.
Who are some of those companies so that listeners can have a go and check them out?
Yeah, so one in particular are our mates at SixPark. They provide a really good menu of ETFs and asset allocation overlays. So, you know, if you're a young person who has a higher risk tolerance who wants to be invested for a long time, they'll say, okay, here you go. Here's a preset bucket of ETFs that we'll put your money into. And they've got a really nice online platform and really a lot of good educational content around investing as well.
So what are some of the barriers faced by fintechs from incumbents in the industry? Are there any walls that you need to knock down?
Definitely. I mean, I think the two things that come to mind are getting regulatory approval or certification. Now, fortunately for ShareSite, this is not an area we need to worry about. We're purely a tech company that provides a sort of a presentation layer for investors. But if you are in the lending space, if you're in the payment space, if you're in the banking space, certainly, or the investing space too, chances are, depending on what sort of jurisdiction you're operating in, you're going to need to get regulatory approval, which has become really, really expensive, particularly in the wake of the global financial crisis 10, 12 years ago. So that's a big barrier. The other one I would say too is data portability, which is if your eyes are glazing over, I don't blame you. But it's really important. If you think about kind of the multiple bank accounts you and your wife or partner may have, if you think about sort of all the different places your investments may live, you know, like online brokers, superannuation, perhaps overseas. So in my case, you know, I'm an American. Have been living in Australia for years. You know, I've got accounts scattered all over the place. And then you multiply that by two with my wife. And so unlocking that data and bringing it all together is a real challenge for fintechs. Fintechs are advocating for policies like open banking, which has come online in the UK, which allows the consumer to basically port their data from one bank to another, for example, or your investment history from one fund manager to another. Because it's all well and good to sign up to a fintech, but then it's like, okay, you need to get your data in there and get your ID verified and all that kind of stuff. That's a major challenge for fintech startups.
And it's that's really one of the benefits of fintech startups is that, like with ShareSite, suddenly things that were once manually entered are all done automatically on your behalf.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. I mean, yeah, assuming you can kind of get over that data hurdle, and we spend a lot of time and money at ShareSite doing that, but assuming you can kind of get there, yeah, the automation and the savings thereafter are just incredible. We're able to replicate a lot of the things that a traditional full-service investment platform or wrap account would do in software that's actually free for many investors. You know, and we just do that given our cloud-based business model and kind of our DIY approach to investing.
So what's the problem with the reports that online brokers such as CompSec provide? Why would you need something more than what the broker would provide to you?
Yeah, so this is feedback and questions we get all the time when we're at shows or when we're at, you know, we're meeting with clients and things like that. The online broker, their main sort of emphasis and their main mission is to get you to trade more, right? They want you to store cash with them because they make a margin on cash, and then they want to get you to trade. And in terms of the reporting side of things with brokers, they're only as good as the trades you've made in their platform. And they really haven't put much investment in an area. So, for example, if you look at somebody like CompSec, what you'll see on there is a very basic figure that's green or red. And that's basically a total return. So if you've bought shares in, say, zero, sort of 6-7 years ago, you know, you'll be looking at some outrageously high percent gain, right? And they call it kind of performance gain, depending on where you're looking on that platform. All that is a comparison of the share price today versus the share price when you bought it. It doesn't factor in any dividends. It doesn't factor in any foreign currency. Now, zero is listed in Australia, but it used to be listed in New Zealand. Nor does it factor in annualized returns, right? So we like to do things in annualized chunks at ShareSite because, you know, you could pay an annual salary. You pay school fees on an annual basis. You do an annual household budget. Everything we kind of do as sort of responsible financial human beings is done in annual increments. And so we think that using an annualized performance methodology just makes a lot of sense.
And it's also good for benchmarking so that you can look at other investments as well and compare how yours are going to.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a great way to kind of normalize your investment performance versus a benchmark or anything else in your financial life.
How about self-managed super funds? Are there many people using ShareSite for SMSFs?
Yeah. So about 40% of our client base in Australia track their SMSF on ShareSite. I think SMSFs are just an awesome product for investors. And whenever I explain them to my friends in other places around the world, they're always quite jealous. So, I mean, the definition of a self-managed super is self, right? It's a DIY product. And where we really provide a lot of value is for those DIY SMSF trustees who are running their own portfolio. You know, they're buying and selling shares and ETFs and managed funds. And we can do a lot of not only the performance tracking, of course, but also the admin work as well to bring down their annual running costs.
ShareSite gets a lot of data from seeing what people are trading. In these current volatile times, what are you picking up? What sort of things are investors becoming more or less interested in?
Yeah, so our data guys are looking at this, I think, on a daily basis. I was just chatting with somebody this morning about this. You know, our client base tends to be buy and hold value, sort of value-based investors, which means they're looking for high quality companies trading at a discount to their book value in the academic sense. And, you know, when the market comes off 31% due to an unexpected pandemic, there's going to be a lot of value out there. And so when we look at our sort of trading patterns at ShareSite, we look at sort of the buying and the selling and the most heavily traded shares or instruments. They tend to be kind of the normal companies you'd expect in the ASX 200. And then some of the big ETFs as well. But what we're seeing is we're not seeing selling. We're seeing a lot of buying of ETFs that track global market indices and a lot of the blue chip Aussie companies as well.
I guess at this point, we should point out that this information that you have is completely anonymous, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. Yeah, we take great steps to protect the information that our customers entrust with us. And this stuff is all done in a purely anonymized way. So none of us at ShareSite have access to the actual information stored in client portfolios.
But you do provide newsletters and information about what people, what are the most traded stocks and ETFs.
We do,
so forth.
Yes, on a generic anonymized basis, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's useful information. It's like a little bit of a snapshot about what other people are doing, isn't it?
It is, yeah, indeed. It's interesting to see the trends over time as well. I mean, the usage of ETFs has really ramped up at ShareSite. And the purchasing of overseas shares has really ramped up over the last few years as well, particularly kind of the tech blue chip stocks like Apple and these days Microsoft, where people are sort of flocking to those ultra safe companies in these sort of uncertain times.
Okay, Doug, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Phil.
This podcast is for information and educational purposes only. It isn't financial advice, as we don't know your personal financial situation, so you shouldn't buy or sell any investments based on what you've heard here. Any opinion or commentary is the view of the speaker only. This podcast doesn't replace professional advice regarding your personal financial needs, circumstances, or current situation.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.